This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the October 17th edition of Invest Talk. I do appreciate you being with me. Above average investing for the average investor. We're here to try to guide you through the maze of decisions we all have to make as investors. And there's a lot of decisions. It's one of the things about investing, and probably in life too, is that you have to make decisions. There are people who don't make decisions. You can do that. But if you're going to make decisions, you always want to make the best ones you can, especially when regarding money. So what's the secret of those who have amassed fortunes, the multi-millionaires? How do they get there? When people with lower net worth look at the ultra wealthy, many believe that they have some sort of secret investing strategy. Well, they don't. The truth is that these are probably people that understand the basics of having money working for them instead of you working for the money. They know how to calculate risks, and they take good risks with solid information. They're not stupid. They're smart. They're not stupid. And of course, we all know about the multimillionaires and billionaires of the internet inventors, right? We all know that. But I'm talking more about the people who invest their money when they start getting their nest egg together. I mean, remember, Warren Buffett started with, what, $300, $500, something very small. So making good, solid decisions. And of course, one of his rules is, his number one rule, to be honest, is never lose money. Number two rule, his second rule is make sure you pay attention to rule number one. Don't lose money. But it is hard to get that first bunch of money together. It takes time and effort. And then once you do, you got to invest it smartly. You got to understand what you're doing. A lot of people don't. They just don't. Common sense decisions making with intelligence and knowledge, not just, oh, I'm going to buy that because that looks good and everybody's saying to buy it, or I need to get into that business because it sounds good. That's not common sense, intelligent decision making. Do you have questions about how to avoid investing mistakes? Which ones do you make over and over again? Do you make those? We can talk about it live during this hour, 4 to 5 Pacific time. And you can leave your questions on our 24-hour list line anytime you want. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, yeah. My name is Travis, and I'm actually a recent college grad. I'm one of the ones that are just buried, absolutely buried in debt. But luckily, I have a good job. And I was just wondering if you would recommend paying off those student loans as soon as possible, or maybe balance it with a payoff while also looking at the stock market, because I'm very interested, and I know I'm going to be doing it later in my life, and I'm just wondering if I should jump on now. Awesome show, guys. Thanks. Bye.
Well, it really comes to how much interest are you paying on those loans, student loans? Okay, think about the stock market over long periods of time. It usually has, 8, 9, 10% return. And if your student loans are 6, 7, 8%, well, that's pretty darn expensive, and you want to pay those down first. But if they're like 3, 4, 5, I would think about investing. If you're getting free money by your employer match, you get the free money. In other words, if you put in 3%, they put in 3%, or they put in 5%, you put in 5%, then you do that, not pay down the loans with that money, because that's free money you want to get from your employer. Other than that, you work on paying down those darn loans. So it's really a decision of what's the best use of the money. And remember, when you're investing in the stock market, you are taking risks. So if you're going to take those risks, you certainly want a good return. And the average return over many multi-decades is about 10%, 9, 10%. So but remember, that's with taking risks. So some years you don't get that, even near that. Some years you lose money. Whereas a student loan, you're definitely paying whatever interest that is that you have to pay on that money. So the faster you get it paid off, the better. So I'd pay it off as fast as I could, other than getting in a match from the 401k from my employer. And then it comes to, what makes the most sense. And it's hard to answer that question just cold turkey. Like, just do this. That's the way you should. I'd like to look at your financial situation, how much money you're making, you got a 401 coming in, you know, that kind of thing. I just need to know those questions, answers. So what's on the table today? Topics that we're going to discuss. Five engines ready to boost the global market rally. That's one of our main talking points. I have some other topics in mind, by the way. And I want to talk about the death of the gas-powered car. Internal combustion engine. Is it going to die? Well, I want to talk about that. America's number one financial regret. And this is a theme that I've touched base on many times. What people, the decision people make about their finances that they regret. And Vanguard CEO had a big warning about the market. I thought I'd share that with you. Those are things I'm going to talk about. If you have things more interesting, I'd be happy to discuss them first. The Dow was up today. The Dow's up 40. The Nasdaq was flat, zero. And the S&P was up 2, which is not too bad because the market was up a bit better than that and a little, and it was down worse than that. So it was okay. Just an okay day. 888-99-CHARTER is our number, 888-992-4278. So what's on your mind? What do you want to talk about? I'd be happy to talk about anything financial. 888-992-4278. Okay, so what's the number one mistake that the average investor makes that the ultra-rich don't when it comes to investing? What does Investopedia says? I always like Investopedia, as you know. And Investopedia says in deciding to invest only in the U.S. and the EU could be what you should be thinking about. While developed countries such as the United States and those within the European Union are thought to offer the most investment security, this isn't necessarily the case. But they do offer a lot of security. Now, the problem is when everybody invests in the United States and all the money is poured into there, and people are not looking at frontier and emerging markets, those have great potential for growth. Whereas mature markets get expensive, their potential goes way down. So some of the ultra-wealthy are investing in countries like Indonesia, Chile, Singapore. I mean, different countries because they know that's where the opportunities for growth in the short term is. I don't know. What do you think? Do you think the United States is expensive? Do you think European Union is expensive right now? Has it got more ways to go? I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. Do you have questions about developing a strategy that makes sense for you? How much of your portfolio should be in emerging markets, or should any of it? What portion should be in domestic stocks? Let's talk about it. You're listening to Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART for any of your questions. 888-99-CHART, let's go to Hitendra in Fremont. How are you doing?
Good, Steve, how are you?
I'm doing good. You want to talk about Teva? Or Teva?
Sold your position about a month or two ago, and I just want to get your recommendation if we should stick with it or not.
If you already have it, someone emailed me about this today. If you already have it and you still have it, I'm I'm kind of tending for you just to hold on to it because, you know, they cut the dividend by 75%. They're trying to pay down their debt, and that's what they're going to use the debt for. The earnings are going to go down a little bit next year to $3.80, but it's a $14 stock. So it's still.
Yeah.
Now, the only real question you have, Hitchinder, is the company going to go under? And the answer to that is it's not even close. I don't even know why anybody would. You know, it's not even the suggestion that that's going to happen. So I think if you're a long-term holder, I have a feeling it'll come back. My personal opinion is I would like to get back into it, but before I do, I want to see some strength come back. If I still had it, I'd probably just hold on to it. I do think it will come back. I do.
Would you consider adding more?
Not until it gets stronger. Not until the stock starts to move back up. It's got to have some strength before you consider that. Okay.
Okay. such.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for your opinion.
Thank you. That's Teva, T-E-V Pharmaceutical, T-E-V-A, Teva Pharmaceuticals. Israeli developer of generic specialty and over-the-counter drugs, active pharmaceutical ingredients. It's one of the largest. I mean, its sales are $5.6 billion a quarter, and it's a $15 billion company, so three times sales. That's pretty cheap. Okay, book value, about 0.45 times book. In other words, it's half book value. The stock is selling for half its book value, meaning if it liquidated everything, you would get twice. You wouldn't get $14.74. You get twice that. See how the value? Now, it's a great value. They've got problems and issues. We all know the warts on it, and they've been falling for a year or longer. But they have to have the it has to be close to the bottom. Just has to. Well, it doesn't have to, because I've learned over the years in my life that, you know, things could happen. But from any fundamental analysis, technical analysis, it's hard to believe that this company would go under. It's got plenty of cash flow. It's just hard to believe that that will happen. And since they cut the dividend by, 75%, they're going to use that to pay down debt. So, you know, once they get on top of all that, it should start to improve. Should. Okay, I do have an email question about the radio show. What is your opinion on private equity firms like KKR and BX and CG? Well, these private equity firms, you know, which provides money and capital for markets and for different companies and things, they're very volatile. They can make huge amounts of profits, or they can lose. Like in 2011, KKR made 1 cent. This year, they're going to make $2.53 a share. So it can be very, very volatile because of the business. They also usually carry a lot of debt because they use that money, they borrow money and lend it out at higher rates. So if you're comfortable with volatility, these companies are fine. And the bigger they are, the safer it is, but you're still going to get a lot of volatility. And usually they're very cyclical. They do very poor when recessions hit, just to warn you. And many of them have done very, very well because their borrowing costs are so low, very, very well in recent years, because the borrowing costs are so low. You know? When borrowing costs go up, they don't do so good. Okay, so, yeah. Here's an investing term you should know. What is a stock split? It's a corporate action in which a company divides its existing shares into multiple shares. And for instance, if you do a 2-for-1 stock split, that means for every stock you own, you're now going to own two, but it's going to be cut in half in price. So it doesn't mean you have more money. You don't. You just have more shares. It doesn't. It's usually viewed as a good thing, but it doesn't necessarily. That doesn't mean you made more money. It doesn't. You could do a reverse stock split. You know what that is? This is Invest Talk, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley. What money questions on your mind? You can reach me now on Invest Talk 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART. Let's talk to Art in Menlo Park. How you doing, Art?
Good, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for the call.
Sure. I just wanted to see what you thought about AAOI. I know they had like a bad quarter because they lost a large customer.
Yeah. See that? It looks really inexpensive, Art. I mean, this is Applied Optoelectronics, everybody. It's an $844 million company, so it's a small cap company. Manufactures fiber optic network products for the cable TV, fiber to home, and data center markets. Its sales are growing very strong. Earnings are growing well. Its stock is not overpriced. Decent return on equity numbers. Everything looks pretty good. It is selling 3.6 times book value, which Teva is selling a half of book value. This was 3.6 times book value. And that it just had a recent quarter, and the stock gapped down, what, from $56, $57, $58 down to $43 in 3 days. So it's going to be one of those volatile things, Art, apparently. It looks reasonable. What was the news on their sales short, when they reported them? What was it a one-time thing, or did they lose a big customer?
Yeah, I think they lost the big customer. I think it was Amazon.
Yeah, so, see?
That was a big hit. But just looking forward, because I'm thinking they may have, like, interest in with the 100G market.
Problem is Amazon was not just a big customer. It was a huge customer. And if they're going to lose it, their sales and earnings are going to go down in the future. So I think we owned this stock at one point. We got out a while back because we got nervous about the one big customer, Amazon. It always is a problem. I would probably stay away from it, Art, at this point, because even though it looks cheap, it might be one of those value traps. Whereas it looks cheap now, a year from now, when the sales don't come through from Amazon, how far down would that be, a cut of 50, 60, 70% of their sales? And that will kill the stock. Okay?
Okay.
So don't. Thanks for the call. AAOI, everybody. You always have to look about, when you're looking at a company, especially a small company, where are their sales? Are they concentrated in just a few customers? And do they have long-term contracts with them? Or can those customers leave and go somewhere else anytime? It's a very important thing when you're looking at a small company. That's something you want to pay close attention to. Okay? 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So, okay, 5 tailwinds for the global stock market rally. Tailwinds. Well, one of them is that many of the economies are all moving in the same direction, finally. The EU and Japan are growing their economies after years of not growing economies. So that's one of the tailwinds. Another one. Japan and EU are still doing QE. Full bore. They haven't cut yet. They haven't slowed down their QE, which makes no sense. They're way behind the eight ball. Also, hedge funds and big money managers, mutual funds, JP Morgan Chase, all those big firms, they have fallen way behind in performance, and they are desperately trying to chase numbers, trying to get their performance up. And we're talking about big numbers here, not small ones. So that could be a tailwind for future investing. Let's see, what else? What else is another one? The supply of new debt has been sluggish. Not here in the United States, even though it hasn't been that robust here. And new inflows into global debt funds this year means that let's say that's just like a big push. Because when people put money in, they're worried, they put money into bond funds and those kind of things. Where do you think that money goes? Someone's selling bonds. And when they sell bonds, they end up with the cash in their hand. So that tells me that there's a lot of money sloshing around in low interest rate bonds still. So that is also a tailwind. Now, I've been talking about headwinds for a while on the market, what the headwinds. So we're pretty sure what the headwinds are, but there's also tailwinds. We're pretty sure that the market's overvalued, and that's going to actually be one of my talking points today. But I don't want you to think that anybody has some crystal ball and know when this is going to end. No one knows that. I don't know it. No one ever knows that. You got people, smart people have opinions both ways. The market's about ready to go down and have a huge correction, or the market's got these big tailwinds and it's still going to keep going up. Both sides. So now who's right? Someone like me can do is tell you what, in relation to history, where we are today. And almost in all ways, it looks like we're a bit expensive on the market. Many investors get caught up in comparing themselves with other investors, constantly looking at what their peers are doing. Don't get caught up in that kind of thinking. Really, it's bad thinking. Your decision should be made with facts and open eyes, your eyes open for the best opportunities.
Our podcast continues. First, a couple of words for KPP Financial. One of the main lessons for investors in 2008, stop trying to time the market. How many people got out and stayed out? Well, Steve and staff at KPP Financial employ the latest investing technology guided by years of experience in finding opportunity and moderating risk for their clients, investing right along with their clients. KPP didn't get out of the market. They were defensive, but they stayed with the market. Long term, that's the safest place to be. That's the main lesson you should learn. If you'd like help with the ins and outs of today's market, look at the series of investment programs for all life situations from KPP Financial. When you're ready, click on the Investments tab on investtalk.com. Now let's get back to the podcast. Now, InvestTalk continues, a service of KPP Financial, serving the average investor for more than 20 years. Independent thinking, shared success. KPP Financial. Our InvestTalk listener line is open 24 hours a day, 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278, the doctor will be in San Jose. How you doing, Ruby?
Hey, I'm doing good.
Thank you for the call.
Hey, I would like to know about the stock JD.com, when to enter and when to exit.
What's the symbol?
JD.com.
Spell that for me.
Yeah.
Can you spell it for me? I'm still not getting it quite.
It's JD.
JB.
JB. D for Daniel, JD.
GGGY? Not.
No, JD. Okay. D for Daniel.
Got it. JDDY. So you GoDaddy Inc. Okay, let's take a look. I got to get my hearing checked. Just JD? Guys, this is driving me nuts. Is that JD.com? J as in Junior, yeah. D as in Dog?
Yeah, yeah. It's okay. J for Jack and D for Dog.
Okay. Okay. It's a Chinese retailer offering wide selection of authentic products via JD.com and mobile applications. They're growing their sales very good at 30 to 40% per quarter. So that's really strong. It's a $58 billion company. $58 billion. So it's a huge company. Does about $12-13 billion a quarter. Yeah, that's okay. They don't make a lot of money. I will say that they don't. They're going to make 46 cents a share this year, then almost double that next year to 85 cents a share. And it's a $39 stock. So you're looking at a stock that's selling for, you know, fifty PE ratio, and that's pretty darn high. Even though the last 5 years, the lowest PE it's ever sold at is 84. That's the lowest PE it's ever sold at. And so, on that basis, you know, from its own looking at its own history, it's pretty cheap. But it's now a $56 billion company, so it's going to be tough keeping sales growth 30-40%. It's going to be tough for them to keep doing that. On a chart, do you own it already, Ruby? Or do you want to buy it?
I already have it, so oh. I'm looking for an exit.
Okay. If it drops below $37, that's the 200-day moving average, I'd probably go ahead and exit. If it drops below that, that's an exit point. If it goes back up to $47.50, $48, and then stalls again, because it was there back in August, then I'd probably exit it also, because it's having trouble getting above that. So I think you just got to be careful. Don't let it drop too much further on you before you take your money and run. Okay. So
okay,
so just be careful. JD.com, yeah. Everybody. It's a Chinese company, retailer. Okay, you're through JD.com website. It's a mobile application that you buy things through. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Okay, so the gas-powered car, we all know that electric cars are the big thing, right? Tesla, whatever, okay? So electric cars, there are some people who think around 2022, with battery costs continuing to fall and decreased concerns about the range, that's going to be about the tipping point where people will be willing to buy an electric car just as much as they're willing to buy a gas-powered car. And they feel by 2030, analysts do, that one out of three cars will be electric, pure electric, and by 2050, most cars sold in the world will be electric. And now a lot of this is being pushed by governments, right? I mean, it's not all on its own that this is happening. Governments are pushing it. And here in the United States, there's subsidies for all these electric cars. What subsidies mean is the government gives them tax advantage, or gives you tax advantage, or the corporation tax advantage, so they don't have to pay taxes on that money, so that the government helps support them. Okay? And just so you know, there are about 116 different electric cars available today. And by 2020, remember, it's almost 2018, three more months. By 2020, there'll be twice as many, 246 cars, all electric, on the road. Think about this for a minute, and think about Tesla, and think about competition. The regular car companies are going to double the amount of electric cars they're making now. They're making 116 models now. It's going to be 246 models in 2+ years. Don't think that Tesla is going to have all of it all its own way. It's going to be just like any other car company eventually. It's going to be a car company. What's a car company worth? How much money do they make? It's all going to come down to that. Right now, Tesla makes nothing. So, just to let you know, it's not going to sell. It's going to sell like any other car company, and that means a normal P.E. ratio of what, 10 to 15 times earnings. Tesla has no earnings, and it's a $355 stock. So, either earnings have to really, 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 I mean, the earnings got to be $35 a share. Because the shine will come off at some point. I just don't know when. I can't say it'll be next year, the year after, Maybe they'll come up with another super duper car that everybody wants at Tesla. Maybe they'll make the numbers on their Model 3 car, which is supposed to be the everyday man's car. You know, it's a regular sedan. They're coming up with a regular sedan. Aren't they going to compete with Toyota and Ford and everybody else who has regular sedans? Interesting. It is interesting. A survey showed that 73% of investors say keeping my money safe is more important to me than trying to generate returns. 73%. Now, as a financial advisor and money manager, that's my number one priority too, of course. That's why during my portfolio reviews, when I talk to people, I really take a close look at their retirement accounts and their risks they want to take and where they are how close are they in to approaching retirement? Are they in retirement? How much money do they need of these things, of the money they have? Remember, 73% say keeping my money safe is more important. Well, The stock market's not safe, everybody. It's not. Now, I schedule a review every so often, as you know. Every month I'm in San Jose, and I'm going to be in San Jose next month, I think, on the 8th. So if you want to meet me there, or, you know, you can reserve an hour and Skype or telephone with me if you want. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab and then Portfolio Review.
Have you visited our financial news carousel? Many of our InvestTalk insiders make this their home base for financial news. Why go there? It's a collection of important stories all in one place. From late-breaking events and news to resource stories that can help you make informed money choices. Check it out. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab and then InvestTalk Insider.
888-99-CHART. Let's talk to Dominic and Sunnyvale. How you doing, Dominic?
I'm doing well. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I don't want to ask a crass question, but I don't think I'm a bad person, but I wanted to find out, because of the hurricanes and the rebuilding in Houston and the fires here in Northern California, besides Home Depot and Lowe's, what kind of stocks or segments or markets should we be looking at that might be getting a boost?
Well, think about all the cars that they had to replace in the flooded areas, especially trucks down in the south in Texas. But all that has already been built into the price of those stocks. See, you're not the only one that thinks of this stuff, Dominic. People have already thought of these things and driven up prices. But infrastructure rebuilding, if it's damaged, but I don't think we had enough damage, more damage in Texas than Florida. It was just a lot of rain. Infrastructure spending, but you have to find a company that's small enough, and I'm saying small enough, to have the sales meaningful enough to really affect their bottom line. For instance, you know, Home Depot probably won't affect them very much because they're so big. Yeah, more plywood and more home products will be sold. But how much more? Is it enough to really affect their bottom line that much? And the answer is probably not. So you got to find a small company where that bottom line will be affected, maybe a regional company that gets a lot of the rebuilding business. You know, maybe
how about home builders?
That's what I was thinking. Maybe a regional home builder. A regional home builder might be good. Even maybe a regional bank. Why would that be? Well, because they'll make loans. When FEMA comes in, that's not free money. That just means that FEMA backs up loans people get and makes them real cheap. So someone benefits from that. The banks do. So it's not an easy thing. And it's just not. For instance, we bought a stock. I'm going to tell you something we did today. We bought a stock because of the fires in the Bay Area. And the fires in the Bay Area, people were talking, there was articles talking about blaming the power company up there. And the power company got killed. I can't name the company. If you knew what the company's name is, you can bring it up and I can talk about it. But the company got...
PG&E.
Yes. We bought that stock yesterday.
Nice. Now what?
The stock got crushed. Lost like $5 to $7 billion in market cap. But how much, what, a billion, $2 billion, $500 million, how much damage was done, and can you really blame it on the power company? Well, whatever, there was an opportunity. We thought that the company was being blamed or way overly punished for something it may or may not be responsible for. But let's say it is responsible. The damage is what, $500 million? And the stock went down $7, $8 billion in market cap? B with a billion when it's only $500 million? Okay, so there's like a number of deaths, which is really tragic. We all know that. But can you blame that on the power company? You know, why don't you blame it on the wind blowing the fire around? So there's, you know, we're just thinking that that looks like an opportunity. That's the kind of thing you can do, Dominic. So,
okay.
Good luck.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Let's go to David in Virginia. How you doing, David?
Hi, Mr. Peasley. How are you?
Good. You can just call me Steve.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate what you do. I just want to give you that respect.
Thank you. I do appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I have a question. I have two questions kind of related about dollar cost averaging.
Okay.
So my first question is, what is the general argument against dollar cost averaging?
Okay. One of them is it's a form of trying to time the market, and that has never worked in the history. That's one of the arguments against it. It's a because you're putting money in over time, you're just trying to catch it at a bottom as it's going down. Believe it or not, if you're dollar cost averaging, you want the stock market to go down, not up. You want it to go down because you want to buy more shares at a lower price. So that's one of the arguments, and depending on what length of time your dollar cost average in, another argument is, well, if you just put all the money in at once and it's moving up, you'll start getting the full benefit immediately. And markets have an upward bias. So that's the other one, I guess.
So my other question would be then, if I had money to invest right now, why is it better at this particular time of the market to do dollar cost averaging instead of just waiting for a significant pullback of like 10% or more, Buffett would do?
Okay. If you can do what Buffett's do, it would be much smarter to wait. But Buffett will wait years. You know that, right? He doesn't time it, he just waits till it happens, and he doesn't worry about building cash reserves. He's got billions of dollars on cash right now, billions with a B.
Yeah, he can afford to do that.
That's right. He can. He'll wait for the next recession. If that takes 2, 3, 4 years, he'll wait.
Right.
Now, can you do that? And the more important, David, is when that happens. When the recession hits, are you brave enough to jump into the market with both feet? Most people can't do that.
That seems to be the way to do it. That seems to be the way based on what you said.
It's exactly the way to do it. Exactly what you should do. And it's proven over and over and over again, but emotions drive the market. When you're in a recession, the market's gone down 40%. You are so fearful. It goes down 45%. It goes down 50%. You jumped in at 40% loss. The market's down 40%. Now it's down 50%. What do? You get out. You get scared. What you should do is put more money in it.
Yep, now, time.
Now, one thing about Warren Buffett is he has always money coming in all the time from his insurance companies. So he can continue to buy.
That's true. He constantly has more income coming in, revenue. Yeah.
And you and I don't. Once we put all our investments in, we're in. That's it. We don't have that much.
We keep working. We got to find those revenue streams.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks for the call. It was a good call, David. Appreciate it. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, guys. This is Marty from Westfield, a listener of the podcast, and enjoy the information, which is very useful. My question today is to compare two REITs, N Nancy R Richard Z Zebra against M Mary P Peter W Watch. Both of them have very high yields, and wonder which one you think is the safer investment. Thanks again for all you do. I'll listen to the podcast.
Okay, it's very difficult to compare two stocks because I type in one stock, I try to read the numbers real fast, and then I got to type in another stock in the same software, read those numbers fast, and then compare the two. It's very difficult. So when you ask me that over the radio here, it's very difficult to do. The first one's NRZ, New Residential Investment. It's a $5.2 billion company. It's a REIT, investing in residential real estate, okay? Mortgage-related investments, real estate mortgage-related investments. And you're asking which one would be safer. It's a very low PE6. They're going to make $2.56 this year, then $2.14 next year, less, go down next year. Sales are moving up, and it's 11% dividend. Well, it's a $17 stock. They got to pay 90% of their earnings, which 90% of the earnings are forming a dividend. 90% of $2.14 is, $1.80. Okay, so $1.80 on a $17 stock, and that's about a 10% return. Now, see, it took me that long just to do one. Now you're asking me to take a look at another one, and the MWP, which is a medical properties trust, which is a totally different kind of REIT. This is $4.8 billion. Different sectors altogether. If you're going to ask me, just I can give you all the numbers. Same thing, same way as I did before. Their dividend is 7.2%. I would say that the Medical Properties Trust would be a safer, quote unquote, safer bet than the real estate mortgage-backed REIT. Now, why would I say that? Well, because real estate has had a very good run, and I think interest rates are going to rise, and this is a mortgage REIT versus this medical properties is not. This acquires and develops and health facilities. Their dividend's lower too, 7%. But it's a safer dividend, most likely. Okay, MPW. Dan, San Diego, how you doing, Dan?
Real good, Steve. Good to talk to you again.
Thank you.
Hey, I had two things sort of for you. They're connected. I'd like to know your thoughts about the LNG sector, you know, liquid natural gas.
Right.
And I'd like you to take a look at a stock. It's APLP, which makes compressors for compressing liquid natural gas. So just wanted your thoughts.
Okay, this is ArcRock Partners. It's a MLP, Master Limited Partnership, which has different tax implications for you.
Right.
So try to remember that. And I won't go over what they are if you know a little bit about them. It's an MLP engaged in natural gas compression through acquisition of contract operation customers, service agreements, that kind of thing. Their sales have been slowly shrinking, but that's been slowing down. The shrinkage have been slowing down, meaning that I think they're maybe getting very close to being done shrinking. They're going to make 47 cents this year, which is a low for the last 5 years. But next year, they're going to make 95 cents a share. They're going to, it's a $13 stock. That tells me that, you know, I think they're very close to a turnaround. And I think if you're going to buy it, between $13 and $14 is where you buy it. It's $13.70. They pay an 8% dividend. I'm not sure if they can continue to do that, but that's the dividend they pay. It's not like a REIT where they have to pay a dividend. They don't have to. But most MLPs do pay a very good dividend. So
right.
They'll try to maintain that dividend as much as they can. But this is the price. If you're going to buy something like this, this is probably as low as it's going to go. That'd be my guess. Okay?
All right.
Good luck, Dan. Hope it works for you.
Okay.
Is it time for a checkup? A reminder, if you live in Southern California, I have a meeting scheduled at our main office in Dana Point on October 25th. Then I'm in San Jose on November 8th. Just schedule your hour to get it on the calendar. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab, then portfolio review. Time's up, everybody. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. I'm glad you could be with me today. On behalf of Justin Klein and everybody at KPP family, I want to thank you for being part of the show and answering the questions. I do appreciate it. And let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.